Escuchas. Escuchas un podcast de Dixo.
Escuchas
Crimen Digital con Andrés Velázquez.
Por Dixo. Dixo. La productora de podcast más importante en habla hispana.
¿Qué tal, amigos? Bienvenidos a esto que es Crimen Digital, su podcast sobre seguridad en Internet, cibercrimen, todo lo relacionado con delitos informáticos. Mi nombre es Andrés Velázquez, arroba cibercrimen, y hoy vamos a estar hablando con Bob Diachenko. La entrevista será en inglés, así es que vayan a la página, ya sea de Dixo o dentro de cada uno de los lugares donde lo escuchan, y podrán ver en la información o las notas de este episodio la traducción en español.
I'm talking to Bob. That actually, well, Bob is not your real name, right? So what's your real name so people can know how to correctly say it?
Hi, Andres. First of all, thanks for having me at your very famous podcast. Yes, indeed, Bob is my name, which I use for my international peers, of international colleagues, friends, because my real name is pronounced as Volodymyr, which is kind of really not so easy to understand or pronounce if you are not born here. I was born in Ukraine and live here now. So Volodymyr is sometimes it's even. If people listen or if people watched Harry Potter, they mistaken me for Voldemort or something another character from any other book, anybody else but Voldemort. So I prefer Bob as a really simple and
easy to pronounce, right?
Yeah, it's short. It's really, you know, this. It has the same meaning, almost the same meaning. So, and I used to it. It was my nickname back in the university. So then I use it as a nickname in the internet. So, and now I'm Bob Diachenko.
That's correct. And I have to thank you very much for this call today. We're here at the studio, and I was talking to the producer about, you know, bringing you on to the show. And I still recall that day that I got a DM message over Twitter saying that you needed some help, and we started talking about and well later on using a voice to try and figure out something that you have found. And when we started talking, you know, you said that you had a database. And for me, it was like, you know, how a guy from Ukraine is actually talking to me, trying to figure out what's going on with a database that could have Mexicans information. So in that case, you know, I would like to start before that, so you could share with us how you started on the cybersecurity field.
Oh, that's really old and interesting story. To keep it really short, once I worked in a company, and that company had a data breach.
Okay. Well,
that was not a data breach, but we were informed by a security researcher that one of our databases is facing public internet and there is no password. That was a MongoDB, and millions of our users' information is available just like that. And I was working at that time in a PR and communication department, and basically I was in the front line of integrated communication, and we've started to work on strategy how to communicate our users that their data is safe, because nobody else would check the logs, nobody else access data but security researcher. And at that point I started to dig a little bit deeper into the basics basic principles of how data is stored, why it can be available publicly. So I talked to that security researcher who informed us about the issue. And I really got inspired by the way he did his researches and how easy for him was to find our data. Then I talked to our developers and asked them, why do you think, guys, our database became publicly available? And then they were just scratching their heads, saying that we don't know, something happened, maybe a firewall was down or something like that. And I did not find an answer that would satisfy me, so I started to trying to find similar databases using Shodan, Zoomai, or similar search engines, public search engines. And I was really surprised and shocked to see how many other non-protected databases are available in Shodan, in public web, even in Google.
Right.
If you just use the correct query, you would be able to come up with tons of open indexes with SQL dumps and whatsoever.
How long was this? You know, how long ago you actually got this breach?
My breaking point was 2015. This was when we had this incident, and when I started to change my career to cybersecurity. And I must say here that my background is far from technical. So I'm more on a, non-technical side. I studied journalism, philology, and I really had not so wide knowledge of
Yeah, this is incredible because actually, you know, you're now considered one of the most known security researchers in internationally. So it's very interesting that the way that you're approaching cybersecurity, and that you have been, I suppose that you're getting this knowledge on your own way. You're not getting a certification, or you're not going into a classroom in order to get the knowledge that you need in order to do these situations, right?
Right, and that became my goal, my mission, to show to people how easy it is to find the data, and there is no need in. You don't have to be an engineer or a hacker or have sophisticated skills to target some company or to hack. All you have to do is your bare hands and a little bit of knowledge where to look. And I used that as my mission to show people that if I can find their data, then that anybody in the world can do this.
This is kind of impressive, because normally all the information that is getting into the media right now, they're supposing that you're a security guy and not a journalist or a PR guy. So you started in the other front, you know, in the other side. You actually confronted these technical guys and these developers, and you found out that probably they didn't knew how things happened, and that they're not really, in some cases, concerned about their reach. Now that you're in the other side, you know, that you're finding these databases, and it's very important, at least, you know, for me, if you could explain our listeners on, you know, once that you find a database, because you're using some tools and you're getting that information from the internet, but once that you find this database, you let the end user, or the customer in this case, or the custodian of the database to bring that database down. So why you do that?
It is really important to highlight here that when I find something that has sensitive data in it, I don't publicize it. I don't publish it in order not to attract malicious attention or attention of real hackers who hunt for sensitive data. So first thing I do is I analyze the content of database in order to find any tracks or traces, and then I use open source intelligence techniques to find the emails, phones connected to that person or to that organization, and send them this responsible disclosure. Want to make sure that nobody else try to find the database after I announce a name of organization or some details behind this database. However, there are cases when it's almost impossible to track down the company or organization that owns the data. And when I see those cases and I see that the data is really sensitive and it should not be there in the public internet, sometimes I use to work with experts or security experts all around the world, trying to ask them for help, like with you, Andres, in Mexico or Latin America. And I really learned Twitter magic when I get really good connection from people who care about security, about responsible disclosures all around the world. So I recently had conversation with people in Brazil, Colombia, China, Europe, USA, of course. So and they really helped me to find the data, especially when the database is in foreign language, like Spanish, for example, or Portuguese. And in these cases, yeah, I really feel the power of community when we are on the right way to secure this unsafe internet. I feel like knight in Middle Ages when I fight the evil forces or something like that. So that's really funny, but that also inspires me.
Right, and you're right. You know, at the end, the cybersecurity community is trying to set a precedence that we want to keep things secure, but in the same channel, you know, there are a lot of people that will not react the way they should. And what are the weirdest reactions that you have in the past? You know, when you let this customer or this company that their information is available and pretty much public into the internet. What's the weirdest thing that has happened to you?
The first year of my responsible disclosures, researches, and activities was the most difficult one, because I was just a guy out of blue without no reputation, no community support. I was just reaching out to organization and CEOs or CISOs, asking them to secure the data, and they sometimes considered me as a blackmailer or malicious guy who just wants some money or extortion. So that was really hard, and at that point I even almost gave up on doing those researches and that activity. But then with time, when I got support, when I earned my reputation by doing really big and loud reports at that time, my reputation grew, and nowadays almost each and every report, responsible disclosure that I said, it returns with a gratitude. So I see that companies, maybe they educated, or maybe there is this, you know, GDPR policy here in Europe, when the company feel more responsible for the data and their customers, so they started to react in more proper way, promptly. So nowadays it's much easier to let companies know that we have something wrong with their databases. At the very beginning, it was really challenging.
Yeah, and I bet. And you know, considering what you have seen and the experience that you have, is there something different from what happens in countries like Latin America to Europe or other countries? Or we're talking about the exact same behavior from these system administrators or security experts when we're talking about the type of breaches that you're searching for?
Yeah, I can say that there is still a big difference. For example, between the reaction I have here in Europe or in the US and Latin America. And Mexico is not the worst example in this case. I can even say that Mexican approach nowadays is much better than it was a year ago. I don't know what was the reason for that, but I really hope that I also contributed to cybersecurity education in Mexico. And the worst approach among those countries in Latin America is still in Brazil. So I still have really big issues when it comes to contact the company in Brazil. So I don't know the reasons, but yeah. Interestingly, that I will come to Brazil at some point in May to do a presentation at Meet the SEC conference. So I really want to meet the community there, and I have really good contacts there, and to ask them same question, and maybe together we'll make a difference.
I know that you know, you have found, and at least, you know, from the ones that I have been tracking and in some cases helping you, that case of the 2.3 million records of medical information, that it was from the Michoacán state here in Mexico, and then the other one about the CFDIs, these payroll records that you found in Mexico a couple of months ago. In those cases, you know, and we have seen it on the media, you know, it's still in progress, and the authorities have the information, and they're trying to get hold of the guys that actually did it. But what are you working now? A few moments ago, before we started recording, you spoke about Facebook plain texts and things like that. So what are you working now, and what are you finding?
Well, like you mentioned, those cases in Mexico, they are still open, and I think I will still hear from Mexican authorities about the progress and about the additional information that I provided to them in order to identify the owner of the data. And I'm talking about the latest case with the digital invoices. Those cases are open. The biggest cases that I'm working with now are coming from Brazil, and I still don't know where to report it properly and whom to contact, and trying to figure out the best way to do it. But the amount of personally identifiable information there is overwhelming. So even people from political circles are there with their addresses, identification numbers, phone numbers, emails, a lot of citizens' information is there. So I really can't share too many details on that case, but I think I will have more updates when I come down to Brazil, and I think I will include that case into my presentation to share more. But yeah, a lot of practically every day there is a new exposure that I'm trying to responsibly disclose, and I must say that really big companies are involved. Sometimes I don't publish things that are connected with big companies, and I think that I'm doing the good thing here, and we have a good conversation internally, but in some cases I don't think that all the findings should be made public.
So, you know, time, especially on this podcast, is actually very, very small from everything that we would like to talk to you. And something that I want to really tell our listeners is that you're doing everything that you have said pro bono. So you're not getting paid to get these disclosures and this and finding this information and letting people know that their information or their PI is actually being found. So that's very laudable from your side, and I have to thank you about that and to share with the community. Just to end, two very specific things. The first is what you will tell these youngsters that are starting to look at cybersecurity as their path. You know, you started and you already mentioned it a couple of years ago, but you know, what will you recommend them? And the second one is how people can get hold of you, how they contact you.
I will start from the second question. I'm available on my Twitter almost 24/7. Mayhem Day One, or you can just simply search for Bob Yachenko, or on my site securitydiscovery.com. There is always a way to get in touch with me when you click on author page, and you just got into my details on this page. So yeah, it's really easy to get in touch with me. And as of my tip to those youngsters who try to follow the same path, I would and I had really interesting conversation with some of people who are trying to, you know, copy me or do the same thing. You really need to ask yourself why you are doing this. If you are doing this just for fame or maybe money, maybe somebody would just looking for money, then this is not for you. You have to have this feeling of, you know, sharing the values of the security community. I'm really trying to make a difference, and I'm really trying to make this internet more secure. And I only can encourage everybody and companies and employees to constantly check their IPs or perimeters from search engines like Showdown or Binary Age. There's always this danger that your IP might be exposed, and your webcam is streaming your baby's bed into public internet, which is really scary.
Right.
So that this is something that you can do even without special education or developing background.
That's very helpful, and I just want to finish thanking you for your time. I don't know what time is in Ukraine. I don't want to know. I know that it's a lot of hours ahead of us. But at the end, I just want to say you gracias for this time. And I hope we can talk later on in this podcast and probably get into some other topics that will help us understand several things.
Thanks for having me, Andres. And yeah, I'm really proud of working with you, and I also can name you my friend. I really hope that we will meet somewhere in Mexico or in any other place and shake hands and continue to work together, make this digital world safer. Gracias.
Espero les haya encantado tanto como a mí esta entrevista que le hice al buen Bob. Y pues como siempre, muchas gracias por escuchar este podcast. Nos encuentran en crimendigital.com o @crimendigital en Twitter y Crimen Digital en Facebook. Así es que aquí le vamos a dejar este episodio. La verdad, ha sido uno de los mejores episodios que hemos tenido. Y esto fue Crimen Digital.
Dixo presentó Crimen Digital con Andrés Velázquez.